You're listening to the Next Wave Radio Network.
So that live show,
it was fun.
Did you have a good time?
I'm not
panicking. You were standing up panicking the entire night.
That was a prime example of why I don't do live theater, is because like I just can't get comfortable. Like even after the show, I was still kind of a little on edge.
You were totally edgy after we finished up. It was so funny, man, but it was such a good time. Hey guys, it's the Editing Bay on the Next Wave Radio Network. My name's Joe, and we don't have Joel this week. He is on his National Lampoon's European vacation, so I dragged Jeff. I didn't just drag Jeff onto the podcast. I decided to, like, I got out of work today, and I just drove up to Jeff's door, and I call him up. I'm like, hey, get out of bed. I'm taking you on a mandate. We're going to a movie. And he's like, what? What movie? And we went to see Draft Day. And he didn't want to see it. He's like, what about Divergent or Oculus?
I know. Dude, please. At least Oculus' guy was Karen.
Katie Sackhoff and Karen Gillan.
Yes.
Yeah. Maybe someday we'll do that. But no, Draft Day, dude, Costner. God, it looked just bad enough for us to enjoy for this podcast. And I think it was bad enough.
Yes.
It was bad enough. It wasn't overall horrible, but it was a bit brutal.
Right. Like, you know, I will say it was better than I thought it was going to be, but that still doesn't make it a good movie.
Oh, my God. He was bitching the entire way to the theater.
Even as Joe is buying...
I paid for his ticket. I paid for his concessions, and he was still complaining.
Even as Joe was buying the ticket, like, from the little machine outside, I was like, man, look, only, like, 10 minutes in, you know, Captain America starts. Like, we can't do Captain America. That's a good movie.
It's a fantastic movie.
So?
Yeah.
Like, exactly why we should pay money to go see it.
Dude, and he was pleading at one point. He wanted to stay here and just watch Netflix. And I was like, dude, come on. We'll go do something new. We'll watch something current run in the theater. So, yeah, I apologize already for the nature of you can't go on Netflix and watch this yet. But I don't know. I'm kind of satisfied with the choice, at least for the terms of the podcast. So, Draft Day. If you're not familiar with this movie, it's a Kevin Costner flick, and he plays the general manager of the Cleveland Browns. And the title isn't a lie at all.
Oh, God,
no. The whole movie is just over the course of Draft Day.
Not even the entire day, just 12 hours leading up to the draft. And God, do they let you know how much time you have.
Not only do they let you know how much time you have, they are specifically clear as to where everything is, where what location they're at, and what football team plays there.
Yes.
I wouldn't be surprised if, like, the NFL funded half of this movie.
Oh, yeah. I bet what the NFL was contacted by the studio. I don't know. This is what I'm guessing. They're contacted by the producers in the studio and saying, hey, we're going to make this film. And then the NFL is like, okay, we will struck an agreement and hand it over and let them use some licensing rights. And then I bet the NFL went to all the teams and was like, all right, they're making this movie about the draft.
Yeah.
And like, you can pay a certain amount of money and we'll make sure your team gets in the movie. And goddamn, the Browns fork over the cash.
It was too much. It was I'm gonna try to just summarize the story really fast because there isn't a whole lot at work going on here on the surface. Boy, do they bog it down with fucking B plots. But on the surface, it's just about, you know, this guy named Sonny Weaver, played by Kevin Costner. He's the general manager of this team, and he's kind of on his last leg. Like, he's got his one final shot at putting a team together. The first year he was a general manager, his father was the coach of the team. And then, like, after that year, he ended up firing his dad, and still, like, it was somebody else's team or something like that.
Right.
And, like, his father ended up dying a couple weeks before now. This is his third year as the general
manager.
No,
like, a week before draft day.
A week beforehand. Okay. So his father just passed away, and there's all this, like, you know, comparison. Like, he'll never be as great as his dad. And And throughout the whole movie, he's reminded constantly about like how his father would have done things. So he's trying to put together his team. He makes a point of like, I've never been able to just put together my team. If I could just do that, then maybe, you know, maybe I could make a difference. But at the same time, he's also split with his responsibility to the team and how the owner is like, yo, no, you're going to do this or else you're going to lose your job. So it's job security versus his own legacy. And that's pretty much draft day.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like I said, it's mired in fucking B plots and like little ancillary shit that just does not matter at all. We open up the movie with Kevin Costner in his place. You know, you see a woman showering in the background. It's obscured, but, you know, you get some bare back and you find out he's sleeping with what's her name? Jennifer Garner.
Yeah. Who is the team's financial lawyer.
Yeah, something like that. She keeps track of like the salary cap and all that.
Right.
And they're knocking boots. And you find out like right off the bat she's pregnant.
You like I think her first line of dialogue in the movie is like, so what do you think? Or like, what are you gonna do? And then, you know, so yeah, their very first conversation is about her being pregnant.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And
obviously he didn't handle it well.
No.
We didn't get to see how he handled it. We just kind of get to see the aftermath.
Mm-hmm.
And then we see him driving a whole lot of places and like a lot of phone conversations. Jesus Christ, this movie should have been called Split Screen Phone Conversation.
I know.
Because that is what you see the most of in this fucking film.
I know. And did you notice the product placement with that?
Oh, God, yes.
Yeah. All of those phones were Samsungs.
Yep. They were all Samsung phones. Again, it was a movie about phone conversations and fucking product placement. There's one scene that I'm pretty sure Papa John's just like threw in a couple $1 million for them to film. Like, it doesn't matter. There's no reason for them to have this scene, but it's as draft day, the draft is actually beginning to start. And again, like, this movie goes a good like hour and like probably 30 minutes before the draft starts.
It's so bad.
And right before it starts, there's a scene where like all these guys in the Cleveland Browns front office start eating and stuff. And like some dude grabs a couple pieces of pizza out of a Papa John's box.
Yeah.
And this other guy's like, hey man, slow down. That's like your fifth piece of pizza. He's like, don't give me that. Like, I'm a nervous eater. Don't judge me. He's like, yeah, I am too. And he's eating like one of the Papa John's like chicken sticks or something.
I mean,
oh my God. It was shameless. That being said, it wasn't horrible.
Yeah, no, it had its moments. It definitely had its moments where you were like, okay, I'm kind of getting sucked up into the story. Nope, okay, and you lost me. You know,
right.
It was a lot of that. Like, okay. You just dropped the ball
from beginning to end.
Right.
It was like, oh well, okay. I'm kind of getting brought in by this.
Right. Did you also like how they repeated the name of the movie like two or three times within the first 5 minutes of the film?
You busted out laughing the first time they said
yes, they did.
When Chris Berman is like, "This is the day everybody's waiting for. This is draft," and that's when the title comes up on the screen, and you lost your shit.
I did. It's like I was just sitting there. And I was like, I think it was loud enough to where the other people in the theater heard me.
Yeah. So while this thing is going on and you find out that Sonny has these side deals going on with a bunch of different players and he's starting to have to like go back on his word, you know, right off the bat, he's contacted by the Seattle Seahawks and they're like, hey, we want to offer you the number one pick for your next three first round draft picks. Like that's what we want from you, and he ends up giving it up.
Right,
and you know if you know even a little bit about football, you know that you need those future draft picks if you want to build a team, especially if you're in a rebuilding era. You know you need those. You need we're rebuilding, so we're going to need some good spots to start putting key players in position.
And I felt like what you just said kind of speaks to me a little bit because you say if you know It seemed like there were certain things about the NFL and how they do the draft that this movie spoon-fed you. And I felt like those were kind of the obvious ones where, you know, them just spoon-feeding you. Then they're sitting there talking about, like, how, you know, important all these other things are that go on, you know, a year or two down the line from this draft.
Yeah.
And like
that they don't explain
it. Yeah. And they're just like, and of course, like, yeah, if you're someone who's a football fan, you will understand and get that. But someone like me who doesn't understand any of that, the only parts I do understand, well, yeah, you just explain the parts I get.
Yes.
On a silver spoon. The part that I need you to explain is the part you're passing by really quickly.
Right.
Which was driving me crazy. Like, I thought for sure, like, somewhere in the beginning of the film, there was going to be, like, an ESPN-type sports show that is doing, like, a quick rundown of, like, this is how the draft works and all this and that. And like,
which they should have done.
Yes.
Instead, they were giving you character development with, like, the news stories going on in the background.
I know.
And when Costner first wakes up and he goes into his kitchen and you see, like, a story about this Ray Wilson guy who's played by the Houston Texans' Arian Foster.
Oh, that's a real – that's a real football player?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, okay. Arian Foster is.
Right.
He was playing Ray Wilson. So you see this thing about him, like, beating somebody up or whatever.
Yes.
And then Deion Sanders is like, yeah, but can he play?
Yeah, he's like, yes, he beat this kid to an inch of his life, and the kid is still in the hospital. But, you know, he can still play. And, like, in fact, even one of the teams is like, did you hurt your hand? How are your hands? Like, are
no,
they good?
That was Costner.
Oh, that was Costner?
Costner did that. He was talking to Ray on the phone. He was like, did you hurt your hands? And he's like, no, man. He's like, good. Then you just chill out. Just be cool. Which, you know, okay, that scene kind of sets up Costner like, all right, as long as they can play, that's what's important to him. He doesn't care about, like, the moral fiber of these guys.
Mm-hmm.
But then they fucking completely twist that around later in the movie when it's this, like, number one, like, complete jock hole fucking quarterback that everybody wants. This Bo, God, I can't remember his last name now. But it's like it's Bo something, and everybody wants this guy. He's represented by fucking Puff Daddy.
Yeah. Who, by the way, in the credits is starting to go, I guess, under acting. He's doing like what Sean The Rock Combs. Does, and he's using his real name.
Yes. Bo Callahan.
Yeah, Callahan.
That was his name. And so this it's this, you know, just white bread dude that and so they're trying to they everybody wants him. He is the hot prospect in the draft. And eventually, you know, Costner's starting to, like, unravel shit about this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out this dude doesn't have any friends. Like, he had his 21st birthday, and, like, none of the rest of the team showed up. And then there was, like, some weird subplot. Again, you know, and you think I'm exaggerating, and I'm talking about the listener. You think I'm exaggerating about it being fucking just littered with all these weird subplots that don't matter. But it is.
Right.
It is, and I described it to Jeff. This shouldn't have been a movie. It should have been like an HBO series or a Showtime original series, kind of like The Newsroom, called Draft Day. And maybe, you know, the show starts off where, like, the Cleveland Browns, they tanked the end of their season or whatever. And the whole series is about leading up to the draft and mm-hmm. the things they want to do. So then you can throw in the drama of Costner's character with Jennifer Garner being pregnant. You can throw that in. You can throw in the drama of him promising this one prospect, like, hey, you know, I really want you on this team. All right, man, well, don't let me down. And then, like, the dude finding out, like, they're looking at somebody else. And him being made, watch the tape. And then, you know, finding out about the moral fiber of this Bo Callahan guy that they're looking at. And there are so many things that should have been little subplots and character bits that they could have littered in throughout the course of a series. And then the season finale being the draft.
Right.
And I don't know if you could carry that over in that same kind of formula for multiple seasons. But that's a great way to start a dramatic TV show about life in the front office of a football team.
Yeah, is I would say make it a miniseries. That's you make this a 3-4 part miniseries, and you have something really good because what happens in this movie is they introduce all these subplots
and characters that you never really see again,
and so they introduce these different characters and the different subplots, and then because they're trying to fit it in a certain amount of time, along with the main storyline, is sometimes some of the subplots felt really rushed and like, okay, there's a conclusion to it, but it feels like an empty conclusion, like very rushed. And then there are other ones where they're just like, introduce a character and why? Like, uh-huh. you know, didn't even need to be there.
Yeah. Did you feel like, because Dennis Leary plays the coach. There are so many things that he does in this movie. Like, and it's just horribly written dialogue. Like, at one point, you know, Costner's like, do you want to win? Or he says something like that. And Dennis Leary's like, yeah, I come from Dallas. Yeah, well, what's so different about them? They win a lot. And I'm like, someone has not been paying attention to fucking NFL for the past 10 years.
I was about to say, this is when you know, like, okay, some of this movie is based in reality, and some of this movie is based, you know, is completely made up fiction. Because,
yes.
like, yeah, like you just said, if you check Dallas's record, like,
I feel like if you're going to put something like that in a movie, you don't make it Dallas. And that has to be, like, what you said, like, different teams bidding. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe Jerry Jones bid, and, like, I want the coach to have been from Dallas, and I'm willing to pay this much for them to say Dallas wins.
Yeah.
But sports fans, movie fans, if you, like I said before, if you know even a little bit about football, you know Dallas has not been having a banner decade
no.
when it comes to football. You know, you want to say something like you want to say Green Bay or New England. You
yeah.
can say that. Anything but Dallas. Dallas
right.
is a fucking embarrassment right now. The only thing worse is if they had said, like, Oakland. Oakland or
yeah.
Miami. Like, that shit would have been fucking worse. but instead, you've got this coach who comes from Dallas, but he was such an inconsistent character. Like, he was all about, like, I need running backs.
Mm-hmm.
And then at one point, they're watching because, you know, Costner announces, hey, I've traded for the number one draft pick and we're going to take Bo Callahan. And already, you know, Dennis Leary looks pissed that he did this.
Right.
So then at one point they're watching video of Callahan playing and Costner's like, look at that. Callahan's, he's spooked. He got sacked and now he's spooked. He's not playing as well. And Dennis Leary's character's like making excuses now
I know.
For him. And like the whole time I'm sitting there going, I thought you didn't want him on your fucking team. Like, why are you now making
yes,
arguments
like,
for him?
This is your opportunity to be like, yeah, that's why I've been saying all this time, we don't need a quarterback.
Yes.
We need what I said we need.
Right? And then even later on, and spoiler alert, if you really care about that shit with draft day, so at the end, when Costner makes his first round draft pick, he ends up drafting the dude he promised in the beginning, like, I'm going to take you. And mm-hmm. and Bo Callahan sits out. He doesn't get taken first in the draft. And as soon as he takes this dude, again, Leary loses his shit. Dennis Leary loses his shit and is like, what are you talking about? We don't have Bo Callahan. Blah, blah, blah. He should be thrilled.
Right.
He wanted this other quarterback that was already on the team, played by Smallville's Tom Welling. He wanted him to stay on the team anyway. So why is he pissed? No one was paying attention to their character or the continuity of their fucking character arcs. It was such a mess. It was a confusing mess. And because it was, I want to say it lies in the writing, because this fucking movie, and I didn't know this till it was done, is directed by Ivan Reitman.
Yeah, when I saw his name come up on the screen, I was kind of like, what?
Like, right?
Just, I mean, And he did the best he could with what he was given.
We're talking about the director of Ghostbusters, and didn't he direct Stripes?
I don't know about Stripes.
I thought he directed Stripes, too.
I couldn't remember.
I think that's where, like, they all came together was Harold Ramis and Bill Murray and Ivan Reitman came together on Stripes, and then they went on to do Ghostbusters.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Ivan Reitman wrote or directed Groundhog Day. I think he did.
No.
Was that Harold Ramis?
That was Ramis.
I get confused between which one wrote and which one directed or whatever.
Oh, that's a good IMDb.
Yeah, I know, right? You should check that out. Either way, Ivan Reitman, a guy who's got a legacy as a director, putting this out, and it's so thoughtless. And that's probably the best term that I can use to describe it. It's just a thoughtless, rushed fucking movie. Throughout the course of the film, there are little times where Kevin Costner's character and Jennifer Garner, they're dealing with this whole fact that she's pregnant and he didn't address it the right way, but he's already forgiven. Like, by the time he gets to the office, she's not holding anything against him, but there's still moments where he's like taking her and pulling her into like a storage room and trying to talk to her about what happened, but there's no conflict. And without conflict, there's nothing interesting for them to resolve, yet they still keep revisiting it. He still keeps trying to get her in a room and he's like, so what do you want to do? I'm sorry, I messed up. And she's like, no, you didn't. you're okay. Like, it's fine. Like, that actually happened twice in this movie where he's like, no, I, you know, what can I do? I know I didn't react the right way. No, you're fine. It's a stressful day.
Like, right.
Okay, we've already resolved it. Why the fuck are we even dealing with it anymore? It's the kind of thing that it should have just been a movie about a guy trying to get the draft, and it a little bit more of like the boiler room feel of draft day.
Right.
And like, you know, in the thick of it. Because the actual NFL draft, like, takes place over the course of 2 days.
Yeah.
You could have started the movie as the draft was starting, and now all these things are happening, and it's almost like the movie Wall Street, or it could have been like the movie Boiler Room, where just shit is frantic and shit's mm-hmm. happening. And while he's doing his thing and wheeling and dealing, that's when you pull in little things about the family, you know, where she comes in and she's like, I'm pregnant. Shit, I cannot deal with this right now. Like,
right.
Create some drama with it.
Which she should have been aware, you know, she works for the organization as well as Costner. She should have been like, okay, I'm pregnant. Like, yes, I understand that. But guess what? In 12 hours, when all this is done and over with, you're still going to be pregnant and we can talk about it then.
Right.
Like, you know, and like that, with that plot is, I think, introduce it in the beginning so that way throughout the movie
it's
you're like
a ticking clock.
Yeah, you're also like, damn. And in the back of his mind, on top of all this, he's also got this pregnant girlfriend,
right? Because he's got a way job security now. He's got a baby on the way.
Exactly.
So does he think about job security, or does he do what he wants to do? And I think they tried to do that in this, but it was delivered far too like nonchalant.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of felt like, wow, they really don't care about it, so why should I?
Right.
Another thing in this movie is that everything felt really disjointed. Like, it was just a series of conversations, but sometimes they just didn't feel connected. Or they just felt so completely fucking random.
Right. Like towards the beginning of the movie, when Costner and I forget the actor's name, Skeletor.
Frank Langella.
Yeah.
Nice little connection from last week to this week. We had
right.
Skeletor. I forgot he was in this.
Yeah, he played the owner of the Browns. Is so Kevin Costner and Frank are I'm assuming the owner's water park.
Water park. They're in a fucking random water park.
Right. They're in this water park. And he's using the water park as like a metaphor of like, you got to make a splash. You know, you got to make a splash. And, you know, and
what does he say at the end of the scene?
Yeah, he was.
Everybody wants to get wet.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's not everyone wants to get wet. It's something. It's like everyone is willing to pay to get wet or something like that. Like,
you got to pay to get wet?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. It's like everyone likes getting wet and you got to pay to get wet. I think that's what it was.
It was so stupid.
Because like, yeah, but they make it seem like, because he says, you know, in this meeting at the water park, he's like, you got to make a splash, you know. And then a couple minutes later, he says something along the same lines of, you got to make a splash. And then, you know, so you kind of think like this is going to be like a theme.
I was expecting him just to throw out more fucking metaphors. Like, we're on a downward slide, son.
Right.
We need to climb that ladder to get to the pinnacle.
But like, I feel like at the end of the movie by him, like being like, you know, like, way to jump in, or like, you know, way to make a splash. Like, they didn't mention that again. like
that would have been so dumb.
But it would have been. But it would have been a way to connect it or something. You know,
I don't disagree with you.
Is I feel like they tried to introduce all these little personality traits that, you know, they introduce them and then they don't. You don't see them again. Like, you know, for instance, also going back to what you were just saying about when Kevin Costner is trying to always pull the character Allie in and be like, okay, just give me a little bit to talk, you know, is within a span of like 10 minutes, he does it twice. And each time he kind of sets up the same as the first time he grabs her. He's like, I just need 2 minutes to talk to you that in here that's not out there. Like, he
right.
pulls her in the closet.
Right, right.
Then a couple minutes later, he pulls her into the same another closet and then is like, okay, I just need 30 seconds. Like, you know,
right.
is developing this personality trait of like, you know, he's very time management, very time oriented. But then they just kind of drop it and let it go.
Uh-huh. No, yeah, they don't commit. They don't commit to anything in this movie. And so you don't care about it. Like, okay, either you make this movie about a man who got a, who's got a coworker, a woman he's dating that they happen to work together, that she's been a secret for a while. You either make it a movie about them and their relationship and how they've got a baby now on the way and how he's wrestling that with his relationship with his father,
right,
which they didn't do. You know, you build that parallel. They tried to make a scene about it when they went outside, which, oh my God, we're coming back to that.
Yes.
But like they talked a little bit about it, but it could have been more relevant. And that's kind of my problem with this movie is that they kind of had the basic building blocks of what you needed for a successful story like this, but they fucking failed hardcore at executing those things, you know, at linking these motivations, you know. Again, make it a story about either make it a story about a man and a woman who have a baby on the way and the conflicts of them working together, especially in this high energy, you know, high stress environment, especially at this time of year, and make it, though, more about their relationship and how that stress is affecting their relationship and have him earn that relationship by the end of the movie. They don't do that. Or make it a movie about a guy who's working in this high-stress environment of being the general manager of a team on draft day and have it be just over the course of the draft. And it works that she works with him.
Right.
So she can drop that news a little bit. And then, like, that's in the back of his mind and, you know, blah, 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 blah. And then you could have maybe bits where, you know, we see back to shit about, you know, him working with his dad and his dad used to be the coach. And then you can make it a drama in that respect as well. But then they failed at doing that too. Instead, like you said, they kept introducing different ancillary characters to basically tell us the same thing like four or five times. You know, at one point, Costner's talking to this guy who's apparently like security for the team. And his whole job is to check up on the background of players.
Yeah. What, like,
and those scenes took forever, and I got what they were doing. They were trying to make a very cute little character device that he's like, and guess what? And even Costner's character gets sick of it. He's like, just, I don't have time for this. Just tell. And I kind of felt like that was the clearest voice of the audience at that moment when Costner's like, I don't have time for this. Just tell me. That's how I felt as an audience member. I don't have time. Just tell me. Or, all right, I get the point. You don't have to keep harping on it. You know, and then after he talks to the security guy, then Costner calls up Sam Elliott. Fucking Sam Elliott's in this movie for 10 seconds. He gets one of the top billing spaces at the end of the movie.
I know.
And he's only in it for 15 seconds. And he calls him and he's like, Coach, I want to talk to you about Bo Callahan. So did his team come to his birthday party? Does he have any friends?
Man, that's stupid. Of course he is. He's the number one draft pick in the world. Are you saying he doesn't have friends? I got a mustache. Hang up.
And, like, we already got it. We got it. We got the point. Yes. We didn't need to call that coach.
Right, I forgot.
You streamlined this movie a little bit.
Yeah, they basically did two subplot lines to show how basically how lonely and how much of an asshole this guy is.
That people obviously don't like him.
Yes.
He's morally corrupt.
Yes. And it's just like, you could have done that with one sub storyline and maybe expanded on it, gone in depth on it. And then all that time that you say from not having the second one, or were there three?
There were. Okay, so he talks to the security guy once, and it goes on for a bit. Then he calls up the coach. Mm. Then the security guy fucking comes back, and that's when he tells him the story about the playbooks.
Right.
And, like, the $100 bill slipped in the playbooks. And then I think that's it. But the thing is, it keeps coming back to that. My point being, though, that right off the bat in the movie, we hear about this one dude who beats up a kid, and Costner's like, eh, you know what? It happens. You can play, though. You're good. But then, you know, it comes down to, like, the moral ambiguity of this Bo Callahan character, and suddenly Costner's like, I don't want him
right.
on the team.
Right, so I don't want the asshole that has no friends on my team, but I will take the guy who plays well with others and gets others in trouble by beating the shit out of other people.
Right.
Now, I just thought of this. Do you think, you know, because one of the things I felt this movie also did is it tried to have little moments of comedy. And do you think maybe that was supposed to be a satirical element? Because right now with the NFL recently, that's been brought up a lot where, you know, they have the first guy who's openly gay who wants to be drafted.
Right.
And everyone's flipping shit. And then in a lot of sports analysis have been like, how is the NFL going to flip shit when you have these guys who are going to jail, who have felonies,
right,
all this other stuff?
I think it set out. I bet you anything, the original draft of this movie was probably a lot more satirical. Mm. But then once you got the NFL on board in order to get permission to use like players and use teams and stuff like that. I mean, they obviously didn't get permission to use like actual owner names or coaches or anything like that. Players.
All they had access to was team names and logos.
Yeah, but it was probably a little bit more of a biting satire before the NFL approved, like, okay, we'll do this, but you need to lay off of the violence and stuff in the league.
Which I'm surprised they actually were okay with being like, you know, yeah, you can mention and have one of the subplots be about how there's a player who is, you know, facing these assault charges.
Exactly. But he's obviously a very sympathetic character. He didn't, they got in his face and he didn't mean to beat them up. But this other person who's just outwardly a prick.
Mm-hmm.
And then like they team him up with Sean Combs. What to like to hammer it home?
Yeah.
Because Puff Daddy isn't a sympathetic kind of guy. So they team him up with him, who also Puff Daddy, horrible fucking actor. Like, every scene that he's in felt like I was watching a fucking middle school play. He's so bad. He's so bad. Like, I didn't mind him so much and Get Him to the Greek, but I think that's because he was over the top.
Well, is two reasons why I think he was good in Get Him to the Greek was, one, like you just said, he was over the top. But two, he was also playing a familiar character that he has dealt with in real life, both his character in the movie and Russell Brand's character in the movie.
Yeah.
You know, he's in the music business. He knows those people. So I think that's why in Get Him Into the Greek, he was a little bit more passable.
Right.
This, on the other hand, is kind of like, you know, like basically you're kind of looked at as a pompous prick. We need you to play that. And he's like, okay, I can, you know, and, you know, that's what he was going for.
Right.
And couldn't even really pull that off.
He couldn't really pull that off. No, it was a little bit painful. And I loved how every time Sonny called him up, it was like he looked at the phone and he'd answer and he'd be like, hey, Sonny, what's going on? All right. And then he'd hand the phone off to Bone. He's like, it's the Browns. It's Cleveland.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you what, guys. As somebody who follows football pretty well, nobody's fucking excited about the Browns. When the Browns call, when fucking Cleveland calls, you're like, no.
Let's talk about like how like the fans are kind of portrayed in the movie. Like I said at the beginning of the episode, I'm not a huge football fan. I have heard of bars doing, you know, like, hey, come watch the draft and do a draft special. You know, like, you know, because all they're doing is putting on all their TVs.
Yeah.
But
this bar was fucking packed.
It is like, okay, the thing that when I saw the bar packed and like they're only drafting, is the first thing I thought of was like, this is kind of like, you know, in Major League when the Indians are in, you know, are shooting for the playoffs and they have the bar and it's packed.
But you see the evolution of it. You see the bars kind of empty at the beginning and then a few people start coming in. And then by the end of the movie when they're in the fucking pennant race, it's packed. That shit's believable.
Yeah.
I could see that happening.
Right. But it's just like packed, like people pushing
on
each
draft
other
day.
to get to the front so they can see the TV on draft day. That seems a little ridiculous. The people out in the streets just tailgating wherever they live out in front of their house.
Yeah.
Bullshit.
I will say
bullshit.
This, though. On draft day here in Dallas, people fucking crowd Texas Stadium.
Really?
Like, they go to Texas Stadium and they show the draft on, like, the big screens and stuff. But I'm still, like, I've never attended it, but I am willing to bet it's not that fucking packed.
Right. Like, they made it look like they were tailgating for the Browns at the Super Bowl.
Uh-huh.
It's like, if the tailgating scenes that were in this movie were set in place where it was a Super Bowl,
yeah.
Yes, that tailgating would have been dead on.
Uh-huh.
You know, with the pandemonium and how crazy the fans are and everyone's excited. But not the draft. Like, I understand, like, okay, you know, we're in a fantasy football league. Let's go to a bar and watch the draft and do our own little fantasy draft.
Right.
You know, I get that shit.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But you're not, like, you're not like, you know, everyone shoving around the bar and like pushing your way forward to no.
You know what? It's kind of, I would liken it to, like, I really like going to, there's a place here in DFW, there's kind of a chain of bars called Fox and Hound. And there's one right off of Central Expressway in Campbell. I like to go there. That's one of my hangouts. I really enjoy it. I like the food. I like the atmosphere. And it's the kind of place where they've got like a million TVs and they've always got sports on. And they'll probably do a draft day thing. And it will never be that packed.
Right.
It won't be. It's just, you know, there's, and maybe it's because there's just a shitload of places in Dallas that you can go to see that stuff.
There are going
to
be a shitload of bars in any NFL city.
I mean, seriously, in Cleveland, there's nothing better to do than drink.
I was about to say. Like,
so I'm sure that, you know, but I doubt still that it would be as packed as that. That's just moronic.
I know. Like, yeah.
Did you feel that this movie cheated us on, like, a little bit of payoff, like, to actually see this team play a game?
Yes. Like, I was very upset that, you know, is, like, I didn't... I thought they would at least, like, you know, what is it where, like, the movie ends and then they're like, then the Browns went on to win, you know, the season, and, you know, Allie and Kevin Costner, I forget his character's name. That's how much I didn't
Sonny.
Give a shit. Sonny. Allie and Sonny had a beautiful baby. Well, like, one of those, like, after the movie ends, like, here's what happened to the characters.
Right.
If they did a better job at, like, you know, timing out the movie and writing it, you could have gotten away with not having it because you could have included it in the movie.
Right.
But seeing as how it seemed rushed already, is that would have been nice to have, to be like, here's what, you know, here's what happened.
Just even if just a postscript. Like, you get to see them take the field at the end, but you don't really get any more satisfaction than that. And I kind of want to see, like, for me, this movie didn't end. Like, there wasn't closure.
Right.
Because did the team work out? Like, did it work out? I'd like to see if the team worked out for Sonny. That's what you built up as the most important thing.
Right.
Instead, what we got for the closure is Kevin Costner walking out the building with Allie. They're holding hands, and he walks past his mom because wife of the former coach is always allowed everywhere within the front offices of a fucking football team.
No, that was,
the draft party.
They were at the suite because the game, the last thing you see is them going in the suite and then the Browns about to run out on the field.
Is that what that is? I thought that was like a flash forward. Like, I thought it was like the end of draft day and like Kevin Costner and because... No. Yeah, that's right. Because they were walking out and he was like, hey, we're having a baby. And they walked out and then you see like the you know, the mom's
that's
like, oh.
Right.
And then
that's
they flashed
right.
forward to them coming into the luxury
okay,
box.
Yeah.
And that's because that's when Jennifer Garner was finally showing.
Yeah.
And then that's when the team came out.
Right. We kind of skipped over.
We skipped over.
I think.
The most random scene in the movie.
And like the most absurd, like. Okay, I understand trying to build this character and this story of like, he's in his father's shadow and he's trying to break out of his father's shadow. I understand that. I get that. But the crazy, absurd things that went along with it in this film.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, okay, so first of all, he has the pressure of like, shit, my girlfriend's pregnant and like, you know, trying to, you know, that.
And
that
I work
drama.
With her. She's my secret girlfriend kind of right now.
Even though everyone in the office knows, yes. But no one knows, you know, one of those situations. Then, you know, and as it's discussed in the movie, his dad had, you know, Kevin Costner's only been working with the Browns first off for 2 years.
Uh huh.
So like the whole fact that they're like, you know, you got to do this. You got to do this. It's like, well, dude, he literally hasn't had any time to build a team and to see it. You know, the fact that you have this guy in place for 2 years and his job is already on the line.
Right.
What the fuck? No. Yeah. No. So he has all this pressure of my job's on the line and my dad just died.
And I've got a baby on the way.
And I got a baby on the way. Well, so his dad died a week ago. And on draft day is the day that, you know, they decide, hey, this is a football family. You know, this is one of the biggest days in football.
Right.
Let's go ahead and read his will.
Let's do the reading of the will.
What?
So, and one of the things is that the dad wanted his ashes spread on the practice field.
Right.
Sonny Weaver Field.
Yeah, the practice field named after him.
Uh-huh. And so his mom shows up, and she's got the fucking urn, and she's like, I want to do this now. And he's like, I can't fucking do it. Meanwhile, Rosanna Arquette is sitting in a chair.
Right. Wait, before we get to her, first of all, Kevin Costner's reaction, I thought, was the most realistic. Like, are you doing that? You're doing this to me today on the busiest day of my job. And we got to go spread dad's ashes on the 50-yard line. Are you shitting me? He's going to be dead tomorrow. His ashes will still be in there.
Yes.
Let's wait.
No, along those same lines that you were saying, like, you'll be pregnant after this is done. We could talk about this later.
Nope. Got to do it right the fuck now. Like, now or never.
Right.
And Kevin Costner, this was like one of the better parts of the movie was his reaction to this absurdity. Like, throwing a laptop against the wall and just be like, no, I don't have time. No, I don't have time.
Right.
Then sitting in the background while all this is going on is
Rosanna Arquette. And she's just sitting there and, you know, he's like, the mom is telling him, you know, I want to spread his ashes. That's what was that, you know, that's what he requested in the reading of his will. And Costner, I can't remember what he says, but I can't remember what he says. He's arguing with her, though, and Rosanna Arquette pipes in, and she's like, at least I was there.
Oh,
like,
oh yeah, yeah, because Sonny's mom was upset that he didn't go to the reading of the will.
Right.
Because he was busy taking phone calls.
Getting ready for draft day.
Right. And so Arquette steps in and is like, well, I made time to be there.
Right. And so you think it's like his sister or
exactly.
something. Exactly. And it's not. It's his ex-wife.
What the fuck is your ex-wife doing at your dead dad's will reading?
Okay, maybe if they were close enough, I get it. You know, she goes to her because my father went to my mother's when my mother's parents passed away. My father went to their funeral. They have kids together, though.
Right.
My parents had fucking kids together.
Right.
So it made sense. Like their children were going, oh, my God, we're sad. Our grandparents are dead. Mom, dad, you know what? So they had to be there for it. Those two don't share any kids. No. There's nothing between them, really. I mean, but they could have a close relationship.
I know.
I'll give them that. But why would she come to the office unless it was also important for her to see the ashes spread?
Right. It's like, why even introduce that? Why even bring this up? Like, okay, so now Kevin Costner, now we know he's been previously married.
Yes. Well, but they still don't use it as any form of like pressure or stress.
Right.
It's just, hey, that's my ex-wife.
Like, why even bring it up? Like, all you're really doing at this point is adding questions because, like you just said, is like, well, maybe she was close. Why would she be?
They don't explain it, though. So it's stupid to set it up. It's stupid to introduce it if it's not going to be explained. If you're not going to use it as a motivating factor for the character, then why the fuck are you bringing it up? It would have made more sense if it was a sister. Mm-hmm. It would have been just as legitimate form of pressure of it's my sister. You know, and then she could have been all judgy of him having a relationship with this younger girl. You know, you could have done something like that. What I do love about that scene, though, and I told this to you when we were leaving the theater. I love the fact that she's like, he's like, do we need to do this now? We need to seriously go out there and do this now. She's like, yes, I want to go out there on the 50-yard line and spread the ashes. And he wants you to read this Gaelic prayer. He's like, no, I don't have time to do that. I'm not going to do it. And like, eventually everybody leaves and Jennifer Garner comes up. She's like, you know what? I think you need some air. He's like, yeah, I do. The next scene they cut, they're outside on the fucking practice field talking. So they had time to go down there and fucking, and he has like this 10-minute talk with her about how he didn't really fire his dad, that he did it for his mom.
Right. His he had hired on, and in his first year, his mom was like,
because the doctor said that like his father couldn't handle the stress, he would have probably died in the middle of a game. And so he did that as a favor to his mom. He fired his father. And like, they don't go anywhere with that. They don't they don't like make it relevant to his worry about having a son, which would have been natural. Instead, it's just, again, they're isolated conversations, Jeff. Like none of these conversations lead to anything else in the movie. They don't add anything. It doesn't give us any clues as to like, oh, okay, this is going to motivate him to do this other thing later on. But like I said, they're on the practice field fucking talking. So by that logic, he could have been like, ah, fuck it. Come on, let's go do this thing. We'll do the Gaelic prayer. And so they're sitting there talking. But to close the scene out, the mom, you see the mom come walking out of like a tunnel and like the entire team, including Dennis Leary and shit, like they're all following her because they're going to go do it. So you think, all right, maybe he's going to be like, all right, I'm going to go read the Gaelic prayer. No. We cut to him inside, and we find out that the computer he broke belonged to the intern.
The intern was actually probably one of my favorite characters.
He wasn't at first, though. I could tell he wasn't at first.
No, not first, but he did add a lot of... I mean, I feel like his character was there to provide comic relief because he had a lot of those scenes where, like, something happened and then they move on and then, like, in the background, you're like, oh, no, like, yeah. You know, like, stuff like that. And
the scene where Dennis Leary comes in with the playbook and he sets it on fire
yeah.
and puts it on Costner's desk. And we hear his voice in the background going, fire, Allie, yeah. fire, yeah. Allie, fire. And then she comes in and sprays it down. But no, I agree. That was funny as hell.
Right. Is the intern, I really felt was like one of probably the better characters because they, you know, he was where he needed to be. His character had a purpose.
Yeah.
And that purpose was executed well.
Uh-huh. And that's not the one character. Like, if you're going to pick right. one character to execute well, it shouldn't have been the intern.
I know. And that makes me think, like, it's probably because they paid the least amount of attention to the intern for when they were writing the character.
Yeah.
It's like, you guys should have done that with all the characters. Which not was, give a shit.
It was really... It was another bit of misdirection, and I don't think it was not deliberate misdirection, but it was misleading with that character because they have this moment where he finds out, like, you know, my life was on this thing, and Costner's like, hey, you know what? Get you a new one with all the bells and whistles. And what I was hoping was to have the intern step up onto Costner and be like, no, you don't fucking understand. Like, my father gave me this laptop or my mother gave me this laptop.
Great.
Or I worked hard and this laptop, you know, I worked hard and bought this laptop on my own. This is the only thing I have in my life. It's the only thing I own. And you fucking destroyed it and you think it's okay just for you to just come in and say, I'm sorry, we'll get you a new one.
See,
because he had that look on his face like he was really sad and he was about to hit the edge. And then they didn't do anything with it.
Right, because the way I would have handled that scene is either did what they did and just be like, we'll get you a new one, like, okay, we're going to leave it at that. Or if they were going to have him explode and kind of yell at Costner for breaking his stuff, is have him yell about, you know, the laptop is important to me, here's why, and that reason why relates to something that Costner's going through.
Exactly. Because that's what a skilled fucking screenwriter does. Instead, and you know what? If you don't want to make it a serious thing, if you want to make it a comedic thing, you could have had Costner coming back into the office and, like, in the foreground, you see the kid and he's like, somebody destroyed my computer. And, like, Costner just kind of quietly slips into his office and closes the door.
Yeah.
Like, that would have been funny.
Yes.
But it wasn't executed either way. Like, I know. It wasn't done in an effective way.
Did you get the feeling that also with certain scenes, kind of like that one where they're talking about the laptop, that they were looking at how much they had shot and they're like, shit, we need more to fill
time.
We
need filler. Just like the fucking scene with the pizza where they're like, dude,
yes.
You've already had five pieces. Because that scene, it didn't matter. Why do we care that these people are eating food?
And the guy who is the security guy also, I think, has one of the, this was another laugh out loud moment for me was...
We're horrible, too, by the way. I do need to add, before you get into this, about lines that just made us laugh, and it wasn't on purpose. It wasn't a deliberate
thing. Oh, yeah.
We're horrible. We are horrible, racist assholes, because Terry Crews... And Terry Crews is running around, and he plays the father.
Oh, that's not the scene I was talking about.
He plays the father of Arian Foster. All right, okay, so this will be something different. He plays the father of Arian Foster. They're two black men. And like, at one point, they get off the phone with Sonny, and they're, like, hopeful, you know, because Sonny's like, yeah, hey, you're gonna be part of the team. And so they hang up the phone, and here are Terry Crews and Arian Foster walking. I can't help it. I've got to. But because they got it staged where, like, they're walking on the streets of New York City. They are surrounded by a sea of white people.
Yeah, that was weird. It's like...
And like, Arian Foster turns to his dad, and he's like, I'm going to be a Brown. And then Terry Crews looks at me, he's like, we're Browns! And I was like, Jesus Christ, this is fucking horrible. Like, this is the kind of shit, it's got to pass what I like to call the 12-year-old test. And if you can write it, if it's supposed to be in a movie like this, it's not supposed to be goofy. If you could deliver the line and it won't make a 12-year-old laugh because it's fucking stupid or juvenile, then you're doing an okay job. But if it's going to make a 12-year-old laugh for the wrong reasons, you might want to rewrite it. And I think with that sequence, they should have fucking rewrote it. They should have rewrote it. Or at least cast some fucking people of color as extras in that scene.
I know.
Because, again, it's a sea of white people and then those two in the middle of it.
I was about to say, I've never been to New York. But
it's a melting pot.
But I was about to say, is like I have a hard time believing that, like, oh wow, there's just one block in New York where they're all white people. Like, no, like, no. Really,
especially not in Times Square.
Oh
they
yeah,
were, they were.
That's
they were
right.
Walking
that's where
over
they
to
were.
Radio City Music Hall.
That's oh, that's right.
Yes.
Yeah, they were getting there early.
Yeah. So there's it's not a sea of white people anywhere in New York, especially at tourist locations.
Yeah.
But where were you gonna go?
Is so they're in like what they call like the war room where they this like you know where all of the front office of the Browns are together, you know, talking about who to draft and all that. And it was around the scene where you know with all the pizza and
the
like
the pizza scene
and like and like these two guys like. I forget if it was before or after like the like five slice line, but like these two guys were sitting there talking. It was the same two guys that did the five slice scene.
Uh-huh.
They were talking about like real important, like, you know, like, okay, we got to do this and this. And then the guy who earlier in the film did the security check, the background check.
Yeah.
Out of nowhere, it was just like, after midnight, like, or like, it's just getting late. You know, something like that.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Just out of nowhere
that had
for no reason.
Nothing to do with the scene. It's just like, just in the background, like these two guys talk and you kind of overhear them, and but you can tell like it's about the trade and it's real important. And then this other guy's just like looking at the clock and it's after midnight. Like, what the fuck,
right?
Man,
no, you're right. You're right. It was like, it's almost like that was shot because they're like, we need to tell the audience that time has been passing. But like there's a ticking clock that is fucking ever in the bottom right-hand corner of this movie.
Oh, my God.
That like it'll do a countdown. And so we know what the hell's going on. We know what's happening. It was a horrible display of trying to tell a cohesive story because they failed on almost every level of it.
Yeah.
This was a movie that should have come out in February.
Yeah.
It really should have.
That
again, it wasn't – I say it failed at telling a story, but it wasn't – it still wasn't horrible. Like there were some decent – there were decent performances.
Right. There were moments.
They were misguided. Like I liked Costner in this movie. Mm-hmm. I've got to be honest. I liked him. I liked Jennifer Garner. I liked Dennis Leary.
Yeah.
I liked Frank Langella. I liked everybody as individual performers. But working together to create a cohesive story, it was off.
Yeah.
It was off.
Is oh man, I just lost what I was gonna say. Is yeah, it had its moments. And
Let me ask you this. What did you think this movie did the best?
Really what I think it did best was it had Leary, some of the lines that Leary delivered were in that classic Leary delivery that the scene called for. And I think when it did insert comedy to break up the monotony of like just constant like crappy storyline, the comedy was done somewhat well.
Yeah. Yeah.
The comedy was done well. That was one thing that I did like.
Uh-huh.
You know, is like I said, is I thought the intern had some great comic relief scenes. I thought Leary had some great relief scenes.
There was even a really cool, fun reaction from Frank Langella when he found out that they weren't going to draft Bo Callahan first, where he's got the jersey with his name on it and stuff. And and they set it up earlier, and you already know, like, oh, shit, this might bite him in the ass. And it was funny. It was a funny payoff. And it really wasn't much of anything other than just he throws the jersey down, but it made me chuckle.
Right. No. It did. So I would say that's what it did right, you know.
Some of the humor that it tried to inject. I thought that it was a decent movie to look at. It wasn't. It at some points it was kind of pretty to look at. It did a good job at creating the energy, especially when draft started. It did a good job, of creating that energy, that frantic energy between the camps. Like, you know, Costner trying to get a trade going between him and another team.
Yeah,
I liked what they did there. I actually kind of felt a sense of tension when he started getting on the phone. In fact, for me, that was the best part of the movie, was when the draft started. It's when I felt like, oh, okay, we now have a clear direction as to what we're doing in this movie. Mm-hmm. And that's what the rest of the movie lacks. And that's what I'm going to say was what the movie did wrong, was that there was no direction.
Yeah.
Ivan Reitman had no idea what he was doing from scene to scene. I don't know if it's his fault, if it's editing or what, if this movie ended up getting chopped up too much because the NFL saw the original cut and was like, we're not happy with that. You need to change that. Take that out. Take that out. But this movie just feels so horribly disjointed.
Right.
And so that's what it did wrong. it's everything.
I totally agree with you with that, with the writing and how it just, you know, like you said, it was just isolated conversations.
Uh-huh.
The other thing that...
And it was well cast. I thought it was well cast.
Now, not so much to the performance, but to the studio, I feel they really screwed up with the timing of the release.
Yeah.
Is you think, like, do this... Release this movie on opening day or opening weekend of the season. Do this around the actual – release this around the real draft, because then you have so much more – you know, like, whoever marketed this movie –
a lot of interest in the NFL.
Right. Yeah. Whoever marketed this, I would say, like,
they screwed the pooch.
You should probably get fired.
Yeah. You know? I put that up there with the fact that, like, MGM did not release a James Bond movie in 2007. Like – the year, it's 007, and they didn't release a Bond movie in 007?
Yeah, you missed out.
Are you fucking kidding me? Even if you don't have a script, bang one the fuck out and film it and get it out in 007, because it's the fucking year of Bond. Like, that, it only makes sense. And just like what you're saying here, release it either around the same time as when draft is, or release it when the NFL season opens. Do it then. But, like... right now, we're in fucking no man's land as far as football is concerned.
I mean, because Combine's already over. Yeah. And
the
like,
draft happened already, I think, didn't it?
I have no idea.
Fuck, I don't know. I that's horrible.
I don't know.
That's horrible that I don't know.
I also thought it was interesting that everyone who said the movie that recommended or didn't recommend but says, like, oh, yeah, it was a good movie, was, like, above the age of 55.
We walk in. Man, you wanted to fucking leave so badly.
I did. I wanted to sneak in fucking Captain America.
In fact, you almost got saved because my girlfriend, like, texted and was like, hey, what are you doing this afternoon? Did you want to, like, get together and hang out? And, like, I was almost like, Jeff, I'm going to drop you off and I'm going to go hang out with her for a little while. But instead I was like, nope, we need to record. We need to get this episode done. Yeah, no, I know. We walked in and we gave the tickets to the old man ticket taker, and he's like, that's a good movie. And I'm like, see, Jeff? He says it's a good movie.
I know. And then just looking at all the other people that walked in, I'm almost 30, and I was the youngest person in the theater.
Yeah.
Now, I think some of that was that, you know, we're going in the middle of the day, the middle of the week. That has something to do with some of the audience. But at the same time, it's like...
I told you too. I'm a magnet for shitty audiences.
I know. You are.
Like, no matter where I sit, there'll be fucking people. We could sit in the most random fucking corner in a completely empty theater, and people will come walk right in front of us, and they would, like, sit right in front of me. I am a magnet for shitty audiences.
Yeah, it was funny. So actually getting back to the movie. So a lot more things done wrong than things done right.
Oh, absolutely. No, I agree with you. If we were to remake, and I know this is weird because it's a fucking new release.
Right.
You know what? At first I was sitting there going, you know what? Maybe this movie, like, maybe they rushed it out because Costner was in Man of Steel. And so they rushed out, like, you know, oh, okay, cool. He was in Man of Steel and he got a pretty good reaction to that. And then, you know, Luc Besson and Mick G had that movie called 3 Days to Kill.
Which I had never heard of.
It was okay. I thought it was all right. It's a little bit of a funny kind of spy. Did you ever see the Luc Besson movie, The Family, with Robert De Niro and Michelle Pfeiffer?
No.
Oh, okay. Okay. No. So that one's a little bit of, like, you know, this mob family goes into, like, a witness protection program in France. And it's quirky, but it's violent. That's kind of what 3 Days to Kill is like. It's a little bit of a quirky spy thriller. I thought for a second, like, maybe they filmed this, like, a while back, like a couple years back. And now, because, like, the Costner iron is maybe a little hot, they decided to like get it out there so that way they can kind of capitalize on it. But no, like everything was like in the 2014 draft. Like yeah. this was definitely made in the past year.
Oh yeah.
And very rushed time, to release.
Very time sensitive.
So it's tough to recast it, but I attempted it.
Yeah, I got a couple.
I started with my Sonny Weaver, my new improved Sonny Weaver Jr., Greg Kinnear.
That's a good one.
Yeah, I think he still fits that age, but he doesn't have the action background that I guess Costner has. But no, he fits that age. I would buy him as being like, because he was in that movie Invincible with Mark Wahlberg.
Right.
As what's his name, the head coach for the Eagles, who I cannot fucking remember his name right now. But I figure, wow, you know, he'd probably translate well into this.
I actually put in the role of Sonny, I actually put Dennis Leary. Is because I think if you, you know, at the end of the movie, you realize, okay, Kevin Costner's, he was actually pretty slick about it, uh-huh. you know, about his whole dealings. But I feel like if Dennis Leary was playing Sonny, is I think they could have done a better job with, I just think he would portray a GM of a team better, being a smartass and like, you know, but, you know, turning off the smartass and then being a hard ass.
Yeah.
Is I think Leary can do that.
A lot like his character work in Rescue Me.
Right, exactly. Uh-huh. You know, and Kevin Costner, I just, because like Kevin Costner, I feel like he can't really turn certain things off and on and, you know, from scene to scene. Like, you know, like he needs to be playing a consistent type,
right?
You know, throughout the whole role, like in Waterworld or Postman, you know.
Some of his finer work.
His best work ever, Waterworld.
Maybe not like Dances with Wolves or no, Robin Hood no. or the, you know, no, the Bodyguard.
I was not a big fan of his Robin Hood.
No?
He didn't have an English accent.
Well, he did every once in a while.
I wasn't
a huge fan of his Robin Hood, but I loved Alan Rickman in that movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he was basically just Hans Gruber right. with a sword.
But so I would, you know, certain scenes, like when he was talking on the phone and he was wheeling and dealing, I think Leary could have pulled off better.
Yeah.
You know, and turned on and been like, you know, a more harsh, like, tone, you know, uh-huh. because there are certain scenes where I was like, Kevin, raise your voice a little bit, right. man.
So if you recast Dennis Leary as Sonny, who did you recast as the coach?
Is initially as the coach, I recast as Ditka. But
just throw in a real coach?
But yeah, exactly. As I think you throw in a real coach who has been through, you know, the draft like this. Because like one of the big conflicts between Costner and Leary is, you know, Leary's the brand new coach and Costner's making all these decisions with the draft without consulting him.
Yeah.
And I think that does go on during draft day for real. And so I think having a actual coach who has probably gone through either the same thing or similarly has gone through it.
Uh-huh. He can bring some right, very genuine reaction
right.
to it.
Because also is, you know, is Leary's role wasn't as big as the previews make it out to be.
Yeah.
Is, you know, I thought he was going to be in this movie a lot more. And I think, you know, with how small the role actually is, you know, there were a couple scenes where he was in, but he wasn't really saying anything.
He didn't do a whole lot.
And, you know, and certain scenes, like, you know, when you first see him and he's given that speech about, like, you know, okay, this one time, you know, he was throwing this pass and, like, you know, telling all these stories.
It was his intro. That was the first time we meet him.
Right. A real coach could also portray that because they tell those stories. Yeah. You know, So initially I said Ditka, but then really I was thinking like you could almost get any NFL coach who is now a commentator
uh-huh.
to do yeah. it because a commentator, you know, they've had enough direction of like, okay, this is how you do this and this, you know, commentating and being on TV, you know, is yeah. I think they would have been able to, you know, to pull it off.
Yeah. You could, I mean, God, you could have gotten like Howie Long in there.
Yeah.
That's true. Yeah. Okay. For the owner of the team, I cast Harrison Ford.
Really?
Yeah, just because I liked the deal he did. I liked the job he did in the movie about Jackie Robinson as the owner of the
You're talking about 42?
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't seen that.
I thought he did a really good job. And it's not like this role didn't really require a whole lot of work. But, you know, Frank Langella's an older guy. Harrison Ford's an older guy, but he brings a little bit more name recognition.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it's one of those roles where like, oh man, it's Harrison Ford. Now all I see is Han Solo. I still think that it's a role that he could have pulled off without dedicating too much goddamn time to it. I like just about all of the individual performances in this movie. I thought everybody did. Mm-hmm. Everybody earned their check is basically what I'm trying to say, except for whoever it was that fucking put the movie together to try to make a cohesive story.
Right. For the owner of the Browns, I actually casted Jeffrey Tambor.
From Arrested Development.
Because I liked the look of the owner, so kind of keep that look. And in fact, that's who I thought it was when the scene first started. That's who I thought it was too. And then when I saw him, I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
You know, so I would cast him because the owner, you know, he has some drama, you know, scenes where he needs to kind of, you know, be straight faced. And I think, you know, I had to look to remember how to pronounce his name. Tambor.
Jeffrey Tambor.
Tambor, okay.
Tambor. I don't know how it's pronounced.
I won't say Tambor. That sounds right.
Good. Sounds good.
Let's call him Jeff.
There you go.
But so I think he could play the some of the more straight face, you know, scenes. And then also when it did call for comedic scenes, of course he's going to be able to pull that off.
Right, exactly. Okay, the final bit of casting that I have is the character of Allie, and I kind of feel like I just picked Jennifer Garner light. I went with Jessica Biel.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
See, I went with Jennifer Connelly because I didn't...
You wanted to match them up a little bit more age-wise.
Exactly. Because, like, I don't know, man. It's like... Really, you're gonna go after Kevin Costner?
Right.
Really, you're in real life. You're married. You can pull down Ben Affleck, but we're supposed to believe? No. Sorry. too much of an age difference.
Yeah.
And you know, so
I mean, there's couples like that out there. I mean, there's young girls that are young women, rather. I'm sorry, young women with, you know, far older men.
This is true, but I don't know. I find it, when I see that, even both in movies and in real life, and it may mean I'm a shitty person, whatever, but when I do see that, the first thing that's coming to my mind is like, damn, that dude's got money. You know?
Well, and he does.
Right.
He does. He does have money.
But then that lessens the love story.
Oh, it makes it less sympathetic, yeah, for sure.
Right. I think closer age range, you know, would have been better.
Yeah. So you've got an extra casting that
I did because I told you, like, he was one of my favorite characters, the intern who has comic relief and then the one dramatic scene. I recasted that with Sam Levine, the kid from
Freaks and Geeks.
Yeah, and then was also in Glorious Bastards.
And he was also in Not Another Teen Movie.
Right.
Yeah.
I think he would have done fantastic in that role.
Not bad. Just thinking about it, I recast it as Elijah Wood.
Oh.
Because the kid resembled Elijah Wood. That's the only reason why.
Well, and that was one of the reasons why I put Sam in, was because, like, yeah, he kind of looks like him.
That's funny. Make sure you let us know who you would recast and as what if you happen to see this debacle of a movie, draft day, in your local theaters. Or just pirate the goddamn thing if you're that interested in seeing it, so you can add to the discussion. And you can always comment on our Facebook page. Just do the search bar thing, editing bay, and you can let us know what you thought of the movie, what you think we should talk about next. I think Joel should be back for this next one, but if not, we'll just have Jeff on again. And we'll do this all over again. But yeah, let us know what you want us to talk about right there on our Facebook page. Oh, hey, by the way, you can go to our website at editingbay.com. And for those of you that missed out on going to the live show, or even if you were at the live show and you didn't get a chance to get one, I think we've got the shirts up for sale up there. $15 a pop, I think.
Yeah.
Just go to our website, check that out. And man, hopefully we'll have something nice and juicy for you next time. And maybe make it a little bit more easily accessible for you too. I'm not sure I would recommend spending $8.50. I think that's how much we paid for the matinee.
I even commented, like, this is going to reflect in the box office that we paid money to go see this. And I was kind of upset by that.
Yeah, he was. All right, so I'm going to go ahead and wrap this thing up. Thank you, Jeff, for filling in for Joel.
Thanks for having me.
And my name is Joe. We are the Editing Bay, and we'll catch you next time.
You've been listening to the Next Wave Radio Network.
That's fucking gold.